In the studio, as promised, I've got Tracy Bonington, who's a local homeopath. Good morning.
Good morning.
And you're going to be presenting at the, I keep calling it Health Expo, but it's Whangaroa Healthy Living Expo. There we go.
That's it.
And you're actually first up, 10 o'clock in the morning.
I am.
Yes.
Yeah, kicking it off.
Bright and early.
Yeah,
so, folks, don't do the Raglan thing and arrive halfway through. Don't be rude to Tracy. Turn up on time.
There is actually a welcome, I think, at 9:30, so it would be lovely to have people there to open the day.
Yeah. Okay. And just give us, without actually doing the talk itself, give us an idea of what you will be talking about for your presentation, which is, it says the next one starts at 10:45, so I presume you're going for 45
short
minutes?
Short and sweet.
Oh, short and sweet, okay. I guess there's lots you could talk about.
Yes. So homeopathy is a vast subject, and it's really hard to squash it into 45 minutes, but I'm going to do my best.
Okay.
I guess my priorities on the day are to give people a good basic understanding of what it is and how it works. So that involves a little bit of history, how it came to be.
Yeah.
230 years ago, almost, was the foundation of homeopathy in Germany. And a little bit of information and explanation around how it works and then how it can be used as one of your primary healthcare systems in your home.
Okay.
It's incredibly effective. So in 45 minutes, I'm going to try and do service to all of that.
So when you say in the home, you're talking about not necessarily going for a consultation.
Both, actually. So homeopathy works incredibly well both acutely and chronically in health.
Okay.
So in the home, there's fantastic treatment for common things like sore throats and ear infections and fever and flu and gastro bugs and those sorts of common ailments that you get in the home. But there's also and first aid, so injuries, bruising. A lot of people know arnica for bruising, bumps and bruises. But a lot of people don't know that arnica is also really great for overexertion. When you get in the garden and you do a whole day digging and planting and you get to the end of the day and you go, I'm going to pay for that in the morning.
Yeah.
A dose of arnica at night before you go to bed helps to relieve all of that tension that's been caused in the body so you can get up and get back in the garden the next day.
Okay, so arnica's not – is arnica – something you apply as well as something you take?
Yes, that's right. So arnica is quite well known as an arnica cream.
Yes.
So it's a component of Anti-Flam, which is a commonly used cream that's in pharmacies. But actually it's also taken as a homeopathic remedy, which has even more of a powerful impact because it helps to reduce that bruising and bleeding and swelling very quickly by taking it as a homeopathic remedy.
So you might use it topically for a localised piece of bruising.
If
but if you're
no,
talking about when your body's aching after a day in the garden,
that's
you take it orally.
That's right.
Okay.
Yeah. And you can't.
But it's a different form.
That's right. So homeopathy primarily is actually internal. It's about internal medicine that you take.
Yeah, that's what
but
I thought.
But when you use it as a cream, it's more sort of naturopathic. So there's a lot of crossover between the substances that we use, homeopaths and naturopaths. We're just using it in a different form. And when you put a tincture in a cream base, you're actually applying it in a naturopathic way.
Okay.
Even though arnica is well known as a homeopathic remedy, in that form, it's more of a naturopathic methodology that you're using, if that makes sense.
Can we explain the difference between homeopath and naturopath?
We can give it a go.
I once, years and years, decades ago, in fact, I got those two mixed up and insulted somebody. So, because if you're really new to this
field, I'm
going to
try not to insult anybody by saying this, but this my first statement about it is the one that I feel explains it the best, which is that naturopaths are a jack of all trades and homeopaths are a master of one.
Okay.
So I don't want to offend anybody by saying that, but naturopaths have a variety of knowledge across the board of natural health. So when you study naturopathy, you study a lot of modalities within that. You know,
you'll
learn about herbs and minerals and supplements and some homeopathy. So if you study naturopathy, you'll do a component on homeopathy.
Okay,
but you might learn massage and oil, essential oils and all of those sorts of things as part of studying to be a naturopath. But as a homeopath, we only do homeopathy. So it's a four-year course.
Right, intense, more narrow focus.
You do anatomy and physiology and pathology for 4 years, which is the same as what nurses are doing.
Yeah.
And then you do also, coinciding with that, is 4 years of studying homeopathy and philosophy, theory, methodology, all of those things.
And where
things.
Did you do that? Did you do that in
I
New Zealand?
I did that in Wellington, yeah, yeah.
I can't do that in New Zealand, okay.
I
know there's other countries where homeopathy is really strong.
Yes, that's right. Yeah, very strong. It's very strong in the UK. It's in the hospitals in the UK. It's very strong in Germany and France. It's a main system of medicine. It's very strong in the States, although it's under attack in the States at the moment. They're trying to ban homeopathic medicine in the States. I don't know if they've succeeded, but in New Zealand, in the 90s, homeopathy was kind of in one of its heydays. Over the last 230 years, homeopathy has had come into a sort of a time where it's really known and people are using it a lot and there's lots of people training, and then it gets under attack by the sceptics because, as a lot of people may know, homeopathy is a very common target for sceptics because... it's not clear exactly how it works, although that's possibly coming now. But it's not liked by the mainstream medical system. So what happens is it kind of comes into its own, and then it gets under attack, and then it kind of go underground a little bit, and then you come back. So in New Zealand, not in the 90s, was probably the latest sort of heyday of homeopathy, and there would have been. I think there were 5 colleges running in New Zealand in the 90s, 2 in Auckland, 1 in Tauranga, 1 in Wellington, and 1 in Christchurch. And there was a lot of people that were coming through those colleges as homeopaths. We've been a bit under attack since probably the late, sort of maybe around 2010, that sort of time, the end of the recession, sort of we took a hit, and then we've pretty much been in a phase of attack since then. It's, of course, exaggerated at the moment with the therapeutics products bill that they're trying to pass, which is also putting a big attack on natural medicine in New Zealand at the moment.
So that's a huge issue. I know that the establishment health system is super protective of its territory. It doesn't like anyone encroaching on it.
Absolutely.
Regardless of what anyone thinks about anything else, they've got a strong union is kind of the way I put it. So let's just look at, I just want to look at how it works, in the sense that someone comes in for a consultation. Are you diagnosing like a conventional doctor? If someone's never been before, are you diagnosing in the same way, or is it a little bit different?
Often people come to me already with a diagnosis, so I don't ever attempt to work outside of the conventional medical system, so I'm often working alongside it.
Yeah.
People will often come to homeopathy because they haven't been able to get the answers in mainstream medicine, so they're looking outside of that to see.
Yeah.
So the diagnosis often is already made, and if the complaint that a person has come with is a serious chronic complaint, and there hasn't been a diagnosis, I'm encouraging people to go and do that as well, so they actually know what they're dealing with and what the options are, because that's really important for people to actually know what their options are across
the board. So this is something that the mainstream medicine excels at, is diagnosis.
Absolutely. Yep,
yeah,
absolutely.
They've got the investigative tools.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
So what happens is what I'm doing in a consultation. So an initial consultation takes 90 minutes generally for an adult, an hour for children. What I'm talking about is what has brought you. So, okay, so here's an ailment. Tell me about the history of that ailment. When did it first occur? What was going on in your life for the year leading up to that complaint occurring? So as an example, irritable bowel is a common thing that people come to homeopathy for. So when did the irritable bowel symptom, what are the symptoms? So what are your individual symptoms? How do you experience it? Then when did it begin? And then what was going on in your life for up to a year at least before the very first symptoms started? Because the way that we look at health is that we live our life life is pretty hard. You know, it asks a lot of us. We often have stress in our life. We certainly aren't plain sailing our way through our lives as adults or children often. So we navigate life and stress happens and we need to mitigate the stress as well as carry on living our day-to-day life. And what happens is that our body starts to get impacted by the tension and the stress of doing both of those things. And it tells us that something's up by producing some symptoms.
Yeah.
So that's the symptoms, any symptoms that we produce in the body, whether it's mental, emotional, depression, anxiety, fear, anger, whether it's physical in the physical body, they are just a way that the body expresses, I'm under stress, I need some help. So as a homeopath, our job is to figure out what was it that did that in the first place? What was it? What was the original stress? Where did it come from?
Yeah.
And so part of my prescription is going to be about that stress as well as the symptoms that the person is presenting with. So who are they in the world? What was the stress or a number of stresses that happened? Because what happens for chronic health, the mystery of chronic health, is often exacerbated by the fact that it's not usually one stress that causes chronic health. It's often an accumulation of a number of things.
Yeah.
And so people get these symptoms in the body and they go, I don't know what's wrong with me. I don't know what's happened. But it's actually because over the last year or 5 years or 6 months, this happened and then this happened and then this happened. And eventually the body's just gone, I'm done.
Yeah, you're stopping now. It's like,
that's
if
right.
If you won't stop, we'll stop you.
Now you need some attention. You really need to pay attention to this. So my job as a homeopath is to really sort of be the detective and go, what is it? What was the pattern that occurred? What happened then? Then what happened then?
Wouldn't the solution to that, though, be to change, if you can, to change your approach to life, your lifestyle, or do something about the stresses?
Absolutely, but that's not always easy, right? Mm. So that's the ideal, that we can just change our life on a dime, right? Yeah. But what we also are looking at is why did that stress occur for you? So what was it that what was it about that circumstance that had the impact big enough to have you unwell? To get you unwell. And so part of that is about really understanding what are your sensitivities in the world. You know, for example, you can be a high-end person who loves adrenaline, who loves the fast life, and if you're working in a job that's really slow and hasn't got much going on, that ends up being a stress because it's not you're not living at the same pace that you're naturally born to live. Right?
So you pay attention to the type of person.
Yes, absolutely.
Like the what's someone called it? The landscape. There was some famous.
So we call it the constitutional picture.
Okay, yeah. All right.
Which covers all of that. It covers your body type. You know, what your family history is. So in terms of physical health, we're a product of our parents, and who are a product of our grandparents, and so on. And so we pay attention to what has happened in your family history in terms of health and well-being throughout your family history, because that also has an impact on who we are, on our belief systems, on the life that we live. Mm. If there's been grief in your family history, if there's been significant grief, it's going to play out in us, you know, because...
Are you talking intergenerational as well?
Absolutely, absolutely. Yeah. So we look at all of that. So as much as I possibly can, I'm trying to get the biggest picture possible of the person sitting in front of me. So they may just come in with a simple shoulder injury or I've suddenly developed anxiety, which actually is a common thing that's occurred in the last few years with the pandemic.
No kidding.
But I want to understand, homeopathy is a very individual medicine. It's not about giving one remedy for everybody who has hay fever or everybody who has anxiety. It's about what is your anxiety, where has it come from, what has exacerbated it. Getting as much of a picture like that not only helps in the dialogue with the person, in the consultation, as we discuss that, there's a healing process, like a, sort of like being in counselling, where people get to really unpack and look at what is actually going on in their lives. And I've lost my train of thought.
It's all right, because I've got a question I wanted to ask, which is actually about COVID, like, because that's such a topical thing. How were you, obviously from what you're saying from that, you didn't have a solution for everyone who came to you with COVID.
That's right, yeah.
So you still went through that same process of learning learning about them.
Yes, yes. Yeah. So COVID, I would have to say that the end of 2021, so I've been in practice since 1997.
Yeah.
I've loved my work. I've been in full-time practice. I've loved my work. I'm in my mode of operating with work. You know, it fits me like a glove. The end of 2021, when the lockdown occurred in Auckland, and I was in Auckland at that time.
Oh, okay. All right. You got to enjoy that.
I got to enjoy that.
Yeah.
So I was in Auckland. There we were in lockdown. Then the mandates came. The vaccination came in. The mandates came in. I would have to say, and the fear in the country escalated over those months as a result of all of that.
Yeah.
It was the hardest time of my entire 26 years in practice, because the thing that has been unique about this pandemic is that everybody is under stress in some way. Everybody, yeah, across the world. It's been a global experience of stress. So this is not normal in life, unless a war would bring the other sort of time when that is the case.
When it's synchronized through the population.
That's right.
Yeah.
But this pandemic had every single human being on the planet under stress. And so, and there's no easy cure to that. There's no, like, looking at, oh, you know, what's going on for you? You know, tell me about your life and so on. There wasn't actually time for that. It was about how are you mitigating and navigating how the stress is impacting you individually. So you had people who were terrified of COVID, who you had people who were mandated out of their jobs because they didn't get vaccinated. You had people who got vaccinated and had injuries from the vaccine. You had people who were in lockdown. My personal experience was my sister was in Wellington. She'd had cancer.
Yeah.
The cancer came back in November 2021. I wasn't allowed to leave Auckland to go and see her because I was stuck in lockdown.
And that was she died.
She died in January the 3rd.
Yeah.
I wasn't allowed to go and see her between being let out of lockdown and her dying, because I came from Auckland, which was the epicentre.
Yeah.
So she died.
And so many people, there must be so many stories like that too.
So that's my personal experience. But everybody, I mean, you talk to, nobody got off scot-free through this pandemic. So the stress levels in our nation have been escalated on top of what is normal stress.
So yeah, so you're trying to incorporate that into the treatment.
Yes.
And that's,
I'd get to the end of the day and I'd put my head down on my desk, you know, and just actually feel for the first time in my practice that I don't know whether I was making a difference at all, because the stress levels were so high.
You can't fight against that.
No.
Yeah, and I have to admit the media seemed to think its job was to frighten everyone into having vaccinations, which some doctors were pointing out was actually, when you're when you're stressed, it actually makes the vaccine less effective anyway.
Yeah, that's right.
So never mind all the other things. It was, but yeah, that was, seemed to be what the media thought their job was to terrify everyone into a reaction.
And it worked, actually. That's the really sad thing, well, is that it was very effective for a lot of people.
It worked in getting people to have a jab, but it didn't work. It kind of worked very well in terms of overall health.
Deteriorated overall health, but it worked in terms of keeping people frightened.
Yeah, and it worked in a narrow sense.
Yeah,
but
yeah,
not in the broader general health.
But I don't think that the mainstream media actually ever looked at the overall well-being and health of our people in our country over the last couple of years. There was no, we know that vitamin D deficiency was now there's research coming out that vitamin D deficiency was a clear indicator for people who got very, very sick with COVID. The better your vitamin D levels, the more likely you were to just fly through it. But never, ever did anybody in the media, anybody in our mainstream health say, get some vitamin D on board. You know, there was no even getting vitamin C on board, which is a known support for the immune system. We didn't get any of that information.
You're very restricted when you're in the mainstream part of the media. We just have to accept that reality. you treated COVID, but you treated it like in the context of the human being that you're talking to at the time. So,
well, the interesting thing
can't really
about,
say what you did exactly because it's different
most
times.
Yeah, I can
times.
A little bit. So what the experience was, so I actually ran a squad of about 60 homeopaths around the country. So I'm an exec member for our New Zealand Council of Homeopaths. And seeing what was happening and how fast it was escalating towards the end of 2021, I made a call out to all the homeopaths in the country to create what we called the pod squad. What we did was we created a network where we could support each other and share information of what we were learning as we were treating COVID and treating other things alongside that, vaccine injury and so on. And so that's actually still been running. You know, that's actually morphed into a more of a general support network now because COVID's a little bit down on the down now. But at that time, it was invaluable. And so what I found, and this is purely just my observation, so is that COVID itself seemed to have two actions. One was the SARS-CoV-2 virus action in the body. So that was kind of, we treated that mostly like a normal flu. The symptoms were similar to any other kind of flu that I would treat.
That's kind of what it is, isn't it? It's a form of flu.
But the thing about COVID is that it's had a secondary response, which looks like it's to do with the spike protein. So if people have chronic illness or people have any sort of part of the body that's a little bit under par, it seems as if the spike protein as a secondary action goes to those vulnerable spots. It's almost like it does an audit of the body and it creates a little bit of havoc in those vulnerable spots. So a lot of people have found that they might have been fine through COVID, but their old injury in their knee has suddenly flared, or that their migraines have come back, or all of a sudden their period is out of whack, or their period pain is worse, or irritable bowel symptoms, urinary symptoms. So it seems as if there's been a secondary response to the virus and to the vaccine. The vaccine seems to have done the same thing. So I've been doing both, you see. So I'm sort of helping people through the illness, but then people have come back and gone, actually now, can you help me with my migraines? Because after a year or five years, suddenly they've come back.
And this is part of what long COVID is as well.
I think it's a big part of what long COVID is. Yeah. So
I know, like, I've been tired since, although I don't think I had COVID. Well, officially, I haven't tested positive for COVID at any stage, but I had a nasty cold at the end of last year, and I don't have high levels of energy anyway, but they've been even less.
And that's the thing. So if you don't have high levels of energy anyway, that's.
So that's where it'll get me.
So people who are prone to autoimmune illnesses or prone to something like chronic fatigue or had glandular fever in their life, anything that has led to low energy would probably be more prone to have what is now being known as long COVID out the other side.
Okay.
You know, also polymyalgia is another thing that seems to be on the rise significantly since COVID and the vaccination program. So, and if you've had a tendency to have that kind of inflammation in your body, that has definitely seemed to have exacerbated whether you've had the vaccine or whether you've had COVID or both. For a lot of people.
Okay.
So I was in the fire at the time, but I feel like I'm probably going to be in the cleanup for a number of years. That's generally the feeling.
Number of years. That's not what we want to hear.
I know it's not what we want to hear, but the reality is if you have chronic ill health and it doesn't get attended to, it's going to get worse.
So is part of that just the novel nature of the virus? It's something completely, well, not completely new, but pretty new to our systems. Like, we've seen viruses before, but not this virus. Is that part of why there's so many unusual things been happening?
I will not claim to have any understanding of the virus at this point, nor the impact on the human being, because it is so new. It's so new for us. We don't really understand it. There's a lot of work being done overseas. It's sadly, a lot of the results of that is not getting to New Zealand for some reason, but there is a lot of work that's being done overseas to understand it. But this is something that's going to take us years to really understand the impacts of, I think. I certainly I don't come from a scientific background. I'm certainly not a virologist or any of those things, and I'm not going to go anywhere near claiming to understand it. But all I'm doing is responding to what's happening in front of me.
Yeah. Hey, folks, we're talking to Tracy Bonington, who's going to be talking at the Whangaroa Healthy Living Expo. First up, 10 o'clock in the Supper Room. Supper Room? Not the Suffer Room. Where'd that come from? let's talk about the controversial side of what's... There's a controversy around homeopathy because there's kind of warring modalities, I guess we'll call it that. And you've probably got in your head, you already know what you say to people who say, oh, it's not scientific and all those sorts of things. Do you kind of invite people to learn more? Like, how do you handle that when you're confronted with that?
I tend to pick my conversations carefully. I'm not interested in changing people's minds or converting people. I kind of don't have the time or the energy to do that. But if people are genuinely interested in understanding what homeopathy is, I'm all up for having a conversation about it. The reality is that it has been around for almost 230 years, and even though it's apparently it does nothing, that's quite amazing for something that's lasted 230 years. So the proof is in the pudding, really. And I've been in full-time practice for 26 years on this medicine. For me, it's the people that you most want to be talking to are the people who have experienced it in terms of, does it work? It absolutely works. And, of course, I see it working every day. That's one of the things I kind of like about homeopathy in a way, is that it's actually a bit of a mystery, because we don't exactly know how it works. But actually, we don't actually really understand the human body either. We don't really understand our human existence.
Well, science has not finished investigating the human body
yet.
That's right. Hey, I've just had a correction. You're not speaking in the supper room. You're speaking in the community house basement room. Thank you, Michelle. Appreciate.
Yeah, so I like the mystery, in a way, of not quite knowing exactly how this medicine works when it can have such an amazing impact on people and their health and their well-being.
How is it researched then? I guess you can still do, you try this treatment on a group of people and see what the results are.
That's how provings are done. So have we got time for me just to briefly explain that?
Let's do that. Yeah.
All right. So this is how it's been done right from the beginning. So right from the founder, Samuel Hahnemann, he was doing this right back in late 1790s. 1796 was sort of the official founding of homeopathy. But he gave up medicine because he became disillusioned with the fact that he was not being effective in the way that he wanted to be. People were either getting temporarily better and then coming back, and the medicine that he gave didn't work again. People either had side effects from the medicine that he was giving them, or people were dying in those days, dying from the medicine he was giving them, because it was pretty ruthless back then. He gave up medicine. He had 9 children. He was fluent in 7 languages, so he really needed to get a job. And he used his language skills to start translating medical text while he was on this quest to discover medicine that was more effective.
Yeah.
He translated medical texts to pay put the food on the table for his family. And one day he read in a medical text that quinine was being used to cure malaria because it was bitter and an astringent to the stomach. And he thought, well, that doesn't make sense, because those two attributes have nothing to do with intermittent fever. So he decided that he would do a little bit of an experiment on quinine, and he got himself a wee dram. He got himself a bottle of quinine, and he took a wee dram every day.
And how much is a dram?
Oh, I don't know. You know, just like a mouthful. Maybe, right. Okay. You know, a shot.
Yeah, I know it's an old phrase, but yeah, I thought we'd try and pin it down a little bit.
Yeah. So he took a little bit every day, and what happened was he developed the symptoms of malaria. And when he stopped taking the quinine, the symptoms went away. When he started again, the symptoms came back. He had a number of colleagues who were really interested in this journey that he was on, and so he asked them to share in the experiment, and they did the same thing. He gave them some quinine, they took a bit of quinine, the symptoms came on, symptoms of malaria. They all started to look as if they were getting malaria. They stopped taking the quinine, all the symptoms went away. He even gave some to his children because he wanted to see if the effect was the same on children.
Okay.
So he gave his children exactly the same thing happened.
Yeah.
So what he deduced from that was there was a great example of Paracelsus's theory of like cures like. What can cause symptoms in the healthy can cure them in the ill. And so that was the foundation of the rest of his life, really, was to look at, okay, so...
So, did he start then giving quinine to people who had...
No, because...
Well, people were already doing that, though, weren't they?
Yeah, that's right. But the problem was, so that was one part of homeopathy, was based on the cure of like cures like. Finding a substance that can cause these symptoms in the healthy or, you know, in natural state can also be curative. But the problem, of course, which was the problem right across medicine, was that a lot of these substances are toxic. In fact, every medicine is toxic. It's just dose dependent, right?
Yeah.
So he wanted to find a way that he could give substance to people without causing toxicity. And that's where the dilution process came in. And he... this is the really short story, but what he learnt was that just diluting a substance, as an example, the way that it's done, one drop of a mother tincture of a plant, for example, in 99 drops of alcohol, and then one drop from that vial in 99 drops of alcohol.
Yeah, that's what I hear.
Right? So 1 in 99 is 1 C. When you've done that 12 times, it's a 12C potency. And
diluted 12.
Yeah, so okay, you've taken one drop, 99 drops of alcohol. One drop from that, 99 drops of alcohol. By the time you've done that 12 times, there's no molecules left of the original substance in the current vial.
And this is where people start going,
that's right.
We don't get it,
that's
it,
right.
It mustn't work.
That's right. So what he found was if he diluted it beyond molecular dose, which would make it safe for people to take, there didn't seem to be any potency left in the original substance. But over a process of time, what he discovered was if he did the dilution and then he vigorously shook the vial, almost energizing the liquid that was in it, and then he took one drop and put it in 99 drops of alcohol and vigorously shook the vial, and he did that. What he found was there was potency in that medicine beyond 12C. And if you use homeopathy, you would know that common potencies are 30C, 200C, 1M, which is 1,000C. They go up to 10,000C, 100,000C, and 1,000,000. So... And what was shown over time is actually the more you potentize, that's a form of potentization is what it's called, the more that you do that, the more potent the effect of that substance becomes. And that's what blows people's minds. But the idea is that there is an electromagnetic resonance that is retained in the liquid, and that it responds to the electromagnetic resonance of us.
So it's working at the level of physics, not biology or chemistry.
Yeah, and it's acting. And my feeling is that it's giving the body an instruction. It's not like taking a supplement. It's like taking an instruction that because it's matching, when we, as homeopaths, we match the substance as much as we possibly can, the symptoms that were shown in the proving of the substance to the symptoms of the person who's sitting in front of us. My job is to match that as accurately as possible. And what I see, this is just what I see, it seems as if when you give that to someone, it's like the body, it's like the the body is heard. It's really hard to say it, but to explain it. But the message is exactly what the body needs to hear in order to activate a proper and good healing response to the problem that's going on. Sometimes people talk about feeling euphoric for a couple of hours or a day after taking the remedy, as if they're kind of on a high.
Right.
Because,
okay.
You know, like I had one guy who'd driven an hour to see me, and I gave him his remedy, took his case for an hour and a half, gave him his remedy. He headed home. He stopped about half an hour into his drive home, parked up on the side of the road, and rang me. And I was in my lunch break, so that was handy, because I took the call, and he said, "What have you given me? I feel like I've been given cocaine. I feel so good." It was like
he knew what cocaine did.
Maybe he did, or maybe he just had an image of it. But he said, "I feel so elated," and we'd just talked, and then I'd just given him this tiny little white pill. So he was just like, "What is that?" But that's what it feels like to me. It's like there's such a complexity to us, to our being, to our health, to our ill health, and we struggle to find the thing that's gonna fix it. But homeopathy has this way of resonating with what is really needed to be done, and then what happens after that is that it's almost like the body has received the right instruction: do this. And then it activates a healing journey that we support and carry on through to resolution, if possible.
I guess there's a significant difference in the conventional approach, is that you need to get something from outside the body to fix the body, whereas this is just triggering internal responses. That's probably quite a significant philosophical difference.
Yes, there's a huge. We ultimately believe that the body, the intelligence of the body, is huge, and it knows how to heal itself. You know what it's like if you get a flu, for example, and you might drink a lot of fluid and take some vitamin C, or you might do nothing, just go to bed for 3 days and just sweat the flu out, and you wake up, you know, 3 days later and you're kind of out the other side. The body has the capacity to heal. We can cut ourselves and we can put a bandage around it, and within 1 or 2 weeks we've just got a little scar left. The body has an innate ability to heal itself. What I think happens is that it just loses its way. It loses, you know, you're working, you're parenting your children, you're trying to get some goodness out of your marriage because there's not enough hours in the day for everything, and then you have an additional stress, like maybe your mum dies, and it's like there actually isn't even enough hours in the day to just be doing what your day to day, and so then your mum dies, which is a huge stress, and it's like the body just you yourself, mentally, emotionally, and physically, you just get out of balance, like you're just chasing your tail. And when that happens, if you have a little bit of something going on in the body, that's when it can get astray, it can go astray. So you might have an occasional headache, but given a number of factors of stress, all of a sudden you're getting a headache every day at 3 o'clock in the afternoon, and you're having to go to bed early with Nurofen and Panadol. So something that was kind of minor, that was bubbling along behind the scenes, given a number of factors, suddenly becomes something that's quite debilitating. And you can't get yourself back to where it was just bubbling behind the scenes. All of a sudden you're locked into this pattern,
right, yep,
where every day at 3 o'clock you start to get a headache coming on. So what happens is that we lose our way, and I think we lose our way emotionally as well. We lose our way mentally sometimes with the stresses of life. So the body has the capacity to heal, but that gets lost in the craziness of it all. And so the way that I see homeopathy work is it says, this is what you need to do. And the body goes, oh, yeah.
Okay.
And then it starts. Because if I treat someone, if I treat a child who's been 3 days in a fever with a terrible ear infection, for example, what often happens is I give the remedy and they go to sleep. And often they will sleep for 3 hours, and they may not have been able to sleep from the pain and the fever for the last 3 days.
Yep.
They sleep an incredibly deep sleep, and they wake up, and for the first time in 3 days, they ask for some food. or they ask for something to drink, or they actually get out of bed, or they smile. And then we just support with a few more doses of the remedy over the next couple of days, and they start to come back. And it can be miraculous.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that it's like there's the child in that situation, that they've been so sort of in the crisis of the illness that the body's just been swept away in that. And it just takes me understanding what's going on, applying the substance that most resonates with the state that's occurring, and then just letting the child find, you know, the child's body and the intelligence of the body find itself again and figure out a natural healing, you know, journey.
So, folks, we've been talking to Tracy Bonington, homeopath, who's going to be talking, I'm told, in the basement of the community house now, 10 o'clock, I was saying, the supper room earlier. Are you hanging around at the Health Expo after that? Are you?
Yes, I am. Yeah, I'm planning to be there pretty much all day because there's some great speakers.
Yeah.
And it's a great time for the public to really see who's in the community in terms of health.
I want to go through the list of people and modalities and things that are going to be there. So I'm running out of time to do that. So I'm going to thank you for your time this morning. I'm going to play a little break and then stay tuned, people. I'll just go through a list of speakers and what they're talking about and things like that in just a couple of minutes. Thanks for coming in, Tracy.
Thank you.